You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of August 10th, 2022, and your opponents don't deserve accolades anyway.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alboard.
We are a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And pour one out, my friend.
C'est la vie. Say goodbye.
Does your PS5 UI seem a little empty these days?
I mean, it's just because I'm not fucking playing anything on the PlayStation 5.
Well, maybe that virtual mantle looks empty because you've lost all of your accolades.
That's probably it.
We're going to talk, I don't know what, this is about one and a half weeks ago or so, Sony pushed an update that removed a feature in the PlayStation 5 called Accolades. And
yeah. Would you have known what this was?
I still barely know what it is. but the internet's resounding response was, you killed what now?
Yeah, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. And I think, well, first off, I think that itself is fascinating, but that also opened up some more thoughts on features, out-of-game features, whether in consoles or PC or whatever, as well as the concept of itself of accolades, which is actually a topic that we've talked about a couple times over the years,
but not
recently. And so we could revisit that a little bit, as well as I do have, as dorky as it sounds, I do have some favorite features
it does sound extremely dorky.
Well, strap in, you're in the right place, dorks. Like, let's talk about firmware.
Yeah, well, let's start with the accolades bit, because like you said, we have talked about it before, and I gotta say, I remember years ago, what, probably like 5 to 6 years ago, talking about Riot Games rolling out some behavior features in order to encourage users to reward positive behavior, right? Yep. When it comes to toxicity and people just being general assets online, there's a sort of the stick method, which has long existed, right? Which is you report someone for being a douchebag. Maybe the reporting system is such that you never have to play with them again. Or maybe they'll be banned because they were saying like terribly racist shit, right? Yeah. But there is a very limited amount of positive reinforcement. Like, what is the carrot in terms of rewarding player behavior?
Yep.
And Riot, at the time, released a tool that allowed you to give positive kudos to your opponents, much like this sounds like existed on PlayStation, that they did end up sunsetting at some point. And I suspect kind of for the same reason that no one was really using it. And part of me wonders like whether or not we've just given up on the idea of the carrot when it comes to how you interact with your opponents, and instead said, you know what, this isn't going to work. Let's just mute all, right? So I think, I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but not too long ago, Riot also was testing out automatically turning mute all on for your opponents in games. So that you would just never, default.
We talked about they got rid of public chat, right?
Yes, exactly right. So I don't actually know what the final solution was, because I know that they were testing it out. I don't know if they actually rolled it out. I turn off all chat with my opponents by default in League of Legends because it's just distracting.
Because why would you have it on?
Why would I have it on? Like, especially in game? Like, they can chat if they're like, wow, I'm so proud of those amazing moves you had or whatever. Oh, I'm impressed by your skills.
I hope you're having a good day, afterwards, boy.
Yeah, like, there's no reality where that's ultimately helpful. So the mute functionality, I think, is ultimately a really strong solution for avoiding some of those hassles. It doesn't make people better people, oftentimes because they don't know either, right? There could be people on the other side that are saying the most racist, terrible shit, and for all they know, I'm listening to it and taking it, and it's a win for them, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, like, a good part of me thinks that we just gave up on it, and I don't know if that's because people don't want to reward their opponents. Like, maybe it's just, or maybe that's so antithetical to the idea of a competitive multiplayer experience to reward people at all that you would never even think about it as an option. But I don't know. A piece of me makes me sad, you know, because I don't really know what other tools are out there. I think that the death of this in the PlayStation 5 is a testament to just not really being a thing that people want. But I don't know. Maybe it's still a thing that people need.
You want the optimist in you wants to believe that positive reinforcement could be an effective means of building up a culture or a set of norms or whatever.
Yeah, of changing good behavior, right? Yeah. Going in a match and saying good game afterwards, right? Yeah. Or, you know, I play a lot of Magic the Gathering in person, and there's a great deal of people that behave differently when they lose. But for the most part, the community is really solid. And there are games, you know, in a format where you lose 75% of the time by design, or you should at least. Losing gracefully, I think, is my hope, would be a skill that people learn to develop through that kind of play. And it develops by giving people kudos for games well done, or shaking their hand afterwards and going, oh, that play was really cool. Oh, you know, maybe I should try this. Like, that interaction with your opponents, I think, can actually help you lose gracefully.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I even saw a news story today about that baseball, the Little League game, where some pitcher, like, hit the batter in the head really hard.
Oh, yeah.
And afterwards, like, the pitcher was crying, and the batter went over and gave him a hug, and it was a big, like, uplifting story, right? But, like, the idea of losing gracefully and being positive with your opponents, I think, is such a cool, valuable thing to learn. And I do think you learn it, I don't know, maybe sometimes in sports. Maybe that's me being too optimistic there also. But my hope would be we would have the tools to do that. I don't think that they exist.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you kept up with what happened in the League of Legends case?
No, like, I should look it up real quick.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I don't know.
Because you said they retired that stuff, but we don't know what they did. They integrate it or replace it with anything?
Yeah, because I think they were testing it last year in terms of disabling all chat. I know that they walked it back maybe a little bit in terms of like where they were testing it out. So they didn't end up testing it out in all regions. But if they shared any data about it, I haven't seen it in terms of how it was received. I don't think that they ended up actually implementing it by default.
But interesting.
Who knows? Yeah.
Going back to this concept on the PS5, it's wild to me that not only did I not use it, which is less surprising, but I didn't know it existed.
Maybe that's the fundamental issue, is how the fuck are you supposed to reward people if you don't even know?
And is there a value in getting these accolades or kudos or whatever other games want to, whatever system they want to set up? Is there a value in getting them other than the personal satisfaction of knowing that you got them?
They like me. They really like me.
Is it truly just a karmic reward versus, oh, if you get these, you could trade them in for Sony fun bucks, or you get prioritized for a new beta when games come out or whatever, you know?
I know that so looking at some Sony like screenshots of the accolades feature, they do reward you with like little icons that you can show off. And some people, that's fucking catnip to them, right? Like, oh, I'm a good sport. I'm going to let the world know that I'm such a friendly guy.
Well, I mean, people buy custom skins and custom dashboard avatars and stuff like that.
Yeah, so, but they don't buy like virtue signaling custom skins, you know?
I downloaded a custom skin that says that I drive an electric car just to show people what a good person I am.
I mean, I guess they do. People do like rep those bumper stickers where it's like, my kid is an A+ student at fucking Rutgers or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. They, they're like, bandying about on their Sony PlayStation 5 dashboard that they're a vegan or something.
Yeah, yeah. At least so I'm also looking at this. They did limit it to one accolade per match and limit it to only people who are not your friends, which makes sense because people would abuse this.
Yeah.
And you can only give one accolade to the same player within 12 hours. So if you just made friends with someone or unfriended someone, you couldn't just spam them.
But it's hilarious. Like that amount of protection, what is the point of that amount of protection? You know, because
I mean, the concern is that users will exploit it with their friends.
To what end, though? Like, it doesn't give them anything besides a digital badge.
Dude, I don't know why people use fucking in-game cheats either.
Well, I get in-game cheats because you want to win.
But you're not winning, though. Like, I don't. Are you winning with in-game cheats? You're cheating.
I mean, this is a much more deep philosophical conversation. But let me put it this way: you're not losing.
In a way, you are losing because admitting that you desperately need cheats.
I mean,
you know,
obviously, that's the Saturday afternoon, movie version of like you're only cheating yourself. But like, I mean, this happens everywhere. This has happened in professional sports where people have cheated. Like, people just will do anything in order to not lose. So like, I get it.
But there's money on the table though for like professional sports.
Fair. That is fair. But that makes it even more. That's one step removed from like an understandable rationale for me, but at least when it's a competitive game, there is something, there's just a reptilian part of your brain that wants to see you on the top of the leaderboard, no matter how you do it. You know, there's a extremely selfish part of you that just wants.
So there's some people out there who just want to the world to know that I am the best guy.
Exactly.
I'm the best person. Look at all the awards I have for being such a cool dude.
Yeah, and so this is like the most virtuous leaderboard to win at. Like, it's just another game to them, I suppose, which is... But again, that I got to imagine... I'm playing the devil's advocate here, but you don't get anything for these. So, like, the fact that they put so much thought into preventing the gamification of the system is also hilarious.
Well, and to your point, the fact that you don't get anything from this, I think, is key. Also, that even if you were to get something from this, in this case, those little icons that Sony gives you, it's at a higher level than the way that your games are experienced, right?
Right.
Most people who play multiplayer games often only play like one or two types of multiplayer games in a given period of time, right? They're dedicated to Fortnite or whatever. There's some degree of brand loyalty that a lot of players have, even if within a year they're jumping between, I don't know, two or three multiplayer games, right? Yeah. In those games, sometimes this feature does exist. So we talked about League and chat and getting rid of the commendations for your opponents, but they still include commendations for people on your team in particular.
Yeah.
And they do reward you if you consistently get these commendations with like packs that you can unlock and sort of in-game item loot boxes, right?
Exactly.
So there is an actual reward to that, but that's at that game level. If you're playing Call of Duty or something, why the fuck do you care if you have a Sony badge? What you care about is the stuff in Call of Duty.
Yes.
So if anything, it's a shame that this wasn't something that was integrated within individual game ecosystems. You know, they could put their foot down, I suppose, and say, you know, just like trophies, you got to have accolades in your game that tie to our accolades or something.
Man, that'd be a pretty hardcore but interesting implementation, because it would standardize some sort of culture across games, not just within certain games or on this meta layer. Like, it would actually be integrated. Yeah.
Well, it would be really interesting too to see that carry over, right? So for example, I know the story mentions that Overwatch already has in-game commendations, for example. Final Fantasy 14, same thing, right? So you can already get, or League of Legends for your compatriots, your allies, who you're playing with. Imagine a world where those commendations travel with you as you played other games, right? So that when you go into another title, it carries with maybe your phone number if there's authentication or what have you, or maybe if it's a Ubisoft Connect account or something throughout all of your Ubisoft games, you can see, okay, this person is an asshole, or this person is widely received and there are bonuses or benefits as a result, right? What if you can prove that you've been a graceful, kind, caring gamer and you've been nothing but positive to your community? You just find matches quicker.
Yeah, exactly. Or you prioritize.
Or like you earn rewards for a battle pass slightly faster than people who haven't proven that they are consistently good members of the community.
So many games have those. Oh, this is the character of the month, and maybe good citizens get a free character every month. You know, so we're just going to give that to you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you earn your way into that spot, right? And I think this method that Sony has is a pretty good way of minimizing the exploitation of that feature. But I mean, again, part of me thinks that, just like we're having the conversation now, we could be creative with how we deal with positive reinforcement of behavior. But I think that the phase of gaming culture is at a turning point right now, or maybe has been over the past few years, where we just don't really want to put in that effort, because I think gamers don't want to put in that effort. And so we've sort of abdicated that responsibility to communities to self-correct, which, I don't know, from my perspective, is a mistake. But again, I fully understand that maybe I am too optimistic and too, I believe, too much in the ability for large scale behavioral change mm-hmm. in gaming. You know, yeah.
You're not ready to just welcome your iron fisted emperor to ban people and or just leave people to the dogs and just let them figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think there are ways to do it, right? But it's just, you kind of have to put your money where your mouth is, you know? If you're going to be giving away a free character, look, games charge for that shit. You know, if you're going to give away skins, they charge for those skins. And so you have to convince someone in the monetization team, wherever you happen to be at, that, hey, look, it's okay if we give out X thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars worth of in-game items every month because it helps keep our community healthy.
Yeah.
That can be a hard sell.
Yeah, it's true. It's hard to quantify against that. So it's a more difficult argument to make.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was also, because this is essentially a feature of the system, I was thinking about
was a feature.
And then there was some other funny articles that we were seeing about, you know, other, you know, hidden or lesser used features in the PS5 specifically. I wanted to talk about if you had any other favorite meta features / kind of, I don't know, systems that exist outside of games or features of consoles that are some of your favorites.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure what counts as a feature, but so the one that comes to mind for PlayStation 5 at least is that quick resume, like hitting that button and pausing the game because I'm bringing up the menu and then going to sleep mode, restarting, and I'm like right back within seconds.
Yeah.
It feels real good.
Yeah.
I love that. Because all the time, I mean, the vast majority of time these days that I'm getting in gaming time on my television, I'm getting in gaming time while like Nicole is doing something else, but she's coming. Like her presence is going to arrive soon, and she's going to want to use the television, right? We're going to want to watch, like, you know, What We Do in the Shadows or something, right? Yeah. The ability to quickly pause and then move on actually is legitimately useful, like versus those bygone days of having to find save spots and stuff.
Isn't it funny the rise of, I mean, really, you could just tie that to the rest mode period, you know, which is what kind of came, I don't know, what was the advent of the rest mode? Probably the Xbox. Was it 360? Did 360 have a rest mode, or was it just like? I think 360
did. But at what point also did games start downloading in rest mode? Because I also love the feature.
Yes.
And I use this, so not so much now, but I use this back to when I worked in an office, you know, pre-COVID days.
Yeah.
I would play PSN games while I was in the office and tell my resting PlayStation 5 download at home to start downloading it. Mwah, chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Especially on launch days, because we all know that feeling of like, fuck yeah, the game's out, can't wait.
Yep.
I'm going to go home and play this. Oh, please wait while you...
60 gigs.
Yeah, like 6 hours to download your day one patch is so annoying, right? Being able to download while you're away from your console, fucking what a grace, what a savior.
You know the monkey's paw of that feature that I've gotten screwed by a couple times now, because I also like that, especially because games do get patched so often these days. It's nice to be able to just say, hey, just keep these coming if I'm not playing the game.
Yeah.
There have been times where, especially with Elden Ring, I got screwed on this a couple times where an update gets pushed and then it kills your rest state, where an update gets pushed and it's like, oh, we closed the game to apply this update. Isn't that great? And I'm like, fucking no, that was not great. Like, don't automatically do that. I've tried to disable that so many different ways, and it always seems to kind of turn itself back on, and it's extremely irritating. I mean, I still think on balance it's a good thing, but there are some games where, crap, man, I was in the middle of this thing, and to apply the update, you had to close down the game instead of just keep it suspended, and now who knows where the fuck I am, you know?
Yeah. I do like being warned, though. They do warn you now more so than they used to in the past, I feel.
If you're live, for sure. I've just, a few times, I don't know. In a lot of weird ways, I think the PS5 has actually taken some steps backward in terms of this quality of life stuff, because it's gotten too presumptive. I'd rather it just, and I've tried to turn on these settings. Like, I should just go through the menus one more time and try it out. But I do want it to download but not install. And I've tried to do that multiple times, and it always tends to kill the session versus, you know, ask me before restarting.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Well, that's a feature you don't like. Is there other ones you do?
So this was just happened when I was playing the Switch the other day. I was trying to download a new game and I didn't have enough space. And instead of having to hunt through the games, the Switch just said, "You don't have enough space. Here are a couple games that we can archive," which is basically like, you know, delete a lot of the local content, but keep the saves, whatever. But they just suggested games. They were like, "Hey, here's two games that we think you could probably archive.
Listen, this game sucks. You didn't play it, Scott. You played 5 minutes of this thing.
You thought you were going to play this game.
You spent $60 and you haven't fucking touched this thing.
You goddamn know that you're not going to play Pokemon again. Archive it."
That's good. PlayStation 5 does this too, I think. They also identify, like, here's a bunch of like excess storage that you could just get rid of now and just dump.
I like that really a lot useful. Because I would rather, unfortunately, we're still in a world where these systems, the onboard storage haven't caught up to the realities of mostly digital games. And so we are kind of constantly having to manage storage. But yeah. I like automating that. And also, especially for someone like me, who's kind of a bit of a digital pack rat, it prevents me from having to, you know, go through all of the painstaking choice of like, "Oh, well, I haven't played Transistor for 2.5 years, but I might want to play it someday." And it's like, just delete it. Just system, robot, tell me which ones to delete and I will trust.
Not PT.
Yes, that's the scary one where it's like, what if there's a, you know, an exclusive game or some weird unpatched version or something, but whatever. I mean, that's not going to happen. Yeah. That's why I still have my PS4 sitting in my garage, you know, because I can't get rid of it because it has a PT on it.
Exactly right.
It's haunted.
Yeah, I think this is why I also think that we've gotten better at managing automatic updates to games as well. Steam does a good job of it too, where you could have the setting be only update when I choose to play it, but it will automatically update that patch, which is nice because then you're not playing some other game and then your computer slows down to a crawl as it's downloading some other asset. I actually think that the management system for the Xbox app is pretty nice as well. It's really easy to see like what you've got installed and what's in your queue and all that management stuff, where it's saved, what drive it's saved in, how big of a file it is. Great. Love it.
There was a funny article on Kotaku that was kind of making fun of this feature going away, and it was a list of features that this person will continue to ignore on the PlayStation 5, which I thought was amusing. The last punchline was around updating the controller drivers, you know, the yes. software or whatever.
What do you think the longest is you've not updated it?
I don't know because I don't even know why I would know to update it.
Well, you know, it's every time you start your PlayStation 5, it's like, "Hey, your controller needs an update. Do you want to be notified in 24 hours or do you want to install it now? If so, plug it in."
I feel like I've done it at least one time. Because I'm not those.
I'm sure you've updated at least more than once. I mean, I've updated the controller like 6 times since I've had it.
I'm kind of obsessive with that stuff, which is why I'm surprised I haven't. Maybe I just do it automatically. Because I do have a lot of times when I turn on the system, a controller is plugged in because I've been charging it. So I wonder if that kind of automates it in my brain, you know.
You're like, "I'm already here."
Exactly. I just don't even think about it. It's like, "I'm gonna go get a glass of water. I'll let this update while I go."
I honestly have ignored it like 6 months plus, because when I start the PlayStation 5, I want to play my game right away, right? Like that is what I'm here for, not to wait for you to install. And then when I'm done, that's when I plug my controller in to charge. But I don't like go into the menu and go, "Please update my controller now." Like, that's just too many steps. So
I've gotten increasingly paranoid with that stuff because as controllers have gotten more sophisticated, it just seems like more and more stuff can go wrong with them. So I'm always
like, what if it explodes because you didn't download a patch?
There's so much stuff in those controllers, you know, like everything from like the software that controls the weird shoulder button stuff to, oh, maybe they pushed some software that helps compensate for the slow degradation of the analog sticks. You know, maybe it will drift less, like all of that stuff. I just get more paranoid these days about that stuff because the controllers do seem like so much more, in a weird way, like so much more finicky, like stuff could go wrong to them more easily. I was doing that on the Nintendo Switch a lot because I was having Joy-Con drift issues, and so I'd go and the Nintendo stuff is even more buried. Like it doesn't notify you, but you can go into a system and say, hey, check for software updates for the Joy-Cons, and I guarantee you there will be some in there.
You're saying Nintendo doesn't make it easy or intuitive to update? What? No.
Their approach to online updates is wacky.
Backwards, yeah. And years behind, you don't say.
I mean, I was getting deep in. I was doing the calibration exercises in there. You know, they have like a little crosshair that you move around to see if the stick is jittering. I mean, I got very deep into those menus at a certain point, and so I just got into the habit of every so often checking the updates. And lo and behold, yeah, there's always some updates for those Joy-Cons somewhere.
You know what's another subtle feature I actually really like, talking about Joy-Cons, is I think it's only on PlayStation 5. I guess they don't know. I don't own an Xbox, so maybe this is a feature as well. But and I think this is relatively new, like within this generation, but being able to change the setting to automatically move to inverted whenever you're playing a new game, because I play inverted because I'm a scholar and a gentleman.
I was about to say, this is just like... giving in to your disease is what yeah, it is.
But it makes it so much easier because when I go into a game, I don't have to find the set in the menu. Where in the menu am I allowed to invert, if at all?
Yeah.
It just automatically defaults to inversion. Ugh, love it.
I mean, I feel like that stuff has gotten so much better from... The Microsoft stuff is good from an accessibility perspective. Like, they've done so much work on being able to creatively map buttons differently at a system level versus a game level. Like, that stuff is, you know, all jokes aside, like, that stuff is super cool because there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to, you know, the games are taking orders from the system level stuff anyway. So like, why not just remap at the system? That stuff is super cool. I like that a lot.
Yeah. Remembering it as well. Yeah. I'm sure that's the case too, for a lot of people that use other, you know, features that allow you to like better make it accessible, be it, you know, text to speech or things like that.
Or like any sort of adaptive controllers, you know, that stuff is just very cool for the sake of just being good to other humans. Which is a neat thing.
Since you're like a features nerd, are there features that you would want? Because I feel like I just don't even think about them until they're available, you know?
That is true. You know, we live in this hellish landscape of different performance settings. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they'd implement this, but it would be cool to be able to tell the console at a system level, always default to performance. I want performance mode on every single one of my games.
Yeah.
You know, and because I know games are going to keep doing this because of people have different TVs and all of that stuff, but I can't think of a time where I haven't chosen the performance mode. So that would be an interesting thing to me.
I would love to see more games give me an example of what it might look like. Can they do that? Can you just like play a video that's like, this is what performance mode is like. This is what, maybe you wouldn't feel it though, you know?
Yeah. I mean, maybe you could do it with like screenshots or something where, you know, it's kind of like the NVIDIA driver things where it's like hover over your mouse to see what it means to go to this card versus this card, you know, that sort of thing.
I remember when playing Miles Morales, I switched back and forth over and over again to see if I could tell a difference.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to compare when the gap is like your screen goes black and you have to wait like 30 seconds for it to come back on. Like, yes. It was hard for me to grok the difference. But when I watched on YouTube, you could see the difference side by side, right? Like the lighting effects in particular on water were significantly diminished, but you lost the buttery smooth 60 frames per second lock, right? So you could actually totally tell the difference, but it was almost easier experientially, like once you're in it and by comparing them side to side rather than jumping back and forth between the two versions, you know?
Yeah. But that stuff's going to continue on. I mean, there's just so many different standards now, and, you know, there's VSync TVs out there. There's just a lot of options for people and how they want to see the games, and so if you could just set it on a system level, I think that'd be cool.
I saw, speaking on that subject, PlayStation 5 is going to, I guess they're testing out now, the option to output to 1440p, which should relieve some, you know, some screen issues for people that maybe aren't running like a 4K television anyway, or just want to scale back for whatever reason, for, you know, fixing some aliasing issues or something.
I imagine that it makes it easier to play on a monitor too, right? I actually don't know a huge amount about that stuff. That stuff has kind of gotten away from me since I haven't gotten a new TV for a while.
I have a 1440p monitor. I just couldn't imagine. I mean, I guess I could actually, like, take a long-ass cable and connect it to the PlayStation and play here.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, the other weird thing that's happening is that the difference between, you know, a 4K TV and a 1440 monitor is narrowing. So I think there are people out there that use their monitors as TVs and their TVs as monitors more often. So, like, having that stuff work more seamlessly is really nice.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't they actually, speaking of other new features, I'm pretty sure the PlayStation 5 was just recently given, like, full PC support.
Oh, interesting. The controller, you mean?
The controller itself, yeah, the DualSense.
Yes.
Because I believe that was not available. You could connect it, but it wasn't, like, an automatic thing.
It didn't. It maybe showed up as, like, a generic USB controller or something.
Yeah.
You know, weirdly enough, the Steam Link has a lot of cool features like that, where it's pretty smart about not just understanding what controller you've plugged in, but being able to map the buttons at a system level, and it just does the Steam stuff, but because of the interface, it's more straightforward as to how to do that.
Sure.
So that is, it goes back to the mapping stuff, but yeah, you know, one thing that I feel like I might have used in the past when I was more finicky about this is all of the systems are adding sort options. You know, I'm going to group these into a folder. You know, here's all my games that I sorted, you know, whatever, here's all my Souls games, here's all my strategy games, here's whatever. I think it'd be cool to do more dynamic sorting. Like I would actually want the algorithm to do that, whereas like right now I just have it as whatever is the latest I've played is at the top.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't find myself often searching through my library to find things. It's not that I'm like, man, I'm really itching for a game that has, I don't know, spaceships and is open world. Let me take a look at my library and see how it has algorithmically sorted my game into those categories, you know?
It came up because I was looking for a new game to play with Sam. And so, like, I had to...
Oh, like in the store, you mean?
Well, both. Because I had a bunch of games downloaded, but I also was looking at the store. And the store options were not super great either. But if I could have said, give me results for games that are of a certain ESRB rating and, you know, multiplayer and within this time limit or something like that. Like,
but not Pokemon. More games,
Yeah. Honestly, like, yeah, like disallow list certain franchises where I just never want to see a Lego game. You know, I just don't show it to me.
I mean, robust search filters. You're totally right. I think that would be awesome. I find that all the time, actually. When trying to find game, we talked about this maybe like a month ago, when trying to find multiplayer asymmetric games, right? Yes. Or like multiplayer games to play together with friends on PC, and overwhelmingly being pushed to horror. And so it's like, okay, well, how do I filter out horror games but still have it be co-op games?
Yep.
And the best thing I could find was a third-party website that compared games to each other based on like user reviews. Like,
that's funny.
Users who reviewed this game also reviewed these other games, so maybe this is a way to get at it right. at it. But I mean, I don't think anyone has a great solution for that. Maybe Steam does it best with their recommendations, but
yeah, that stuff has gotten, I think that stuff is actually fairly accurate, but it's still kind of limited in its scope. You know, it's just trying to find you another game similar to the one, versus like, I'm going to suggest something based off of your parameters that you're probably looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Any other last minute feature talk or any accolades you want to bestow upon me before we call it a day here?
Great chat, Scott. Good job. Always a pleasure.
Best casting badge.
Your badge will come in the mail.
I'll tape it to my PS5.
Yeah, show the world. Put a bumper sticker.
my other badge is a PS5.
Yeah.
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. You can also find us wherever you find podcasts. If you want to give us a accolades, you can do so by leaving us a 5-star review. That's always nice.
All right, everyone. As always, thank you so much for listening. We'll be talking to you next week.
Ciao.